Today's show is sponsored by Datadog, a scalable, full-stack monitoring platform. Datadog synthetic monitoring enables you to detect front-end errors and performance errors by analyzing user sessions and receiving actionable alerts. API tests help you detect and debug user-facing issues in critical endpoints and applications. Build and deploy self-maintaining browser tests to simulate user journeys from global locations. Start proactively monitoring your user experience today with a free 14-day trial of Datadog by visiting datadog.com/frontend-cloudcast. That's datadog.com/frontend-cloudcast.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to the Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from our massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it is Aaron for Cloud News this week. And as you may have heard on the show, it is still pollen season, but it's been a little colder here. And because of that, it actually hasn't been as bad lately. So our running joke of every spring with Brian and I and allergies in our voices, we actually get a reprieve for this week. Let's jump right into cloud news. Cloud news is actually a little light this week, but we've got some really good open source news I wanted to talk to you about, as well as an acquisition as well. Our first article is probably the biggest bit of news within the last week, and that is Docker. Docker announced a somewhat controversial change in their policies, and they've done this a couple times in the past, but this latest one was related to open source repositories and open source public images for a lot of the community projects that are out there. They're actually, up until now, hosted that for zero cost. You know, that was something they were kind of sending out to the community or helping out with the community, but now they're saying, hey, you got to pay up. And pay up to the tune of $420 per year. And many open source projects don't have budgets. And so this becomes a non-starter for them. And many open source projects have published a lot of images to Docker Hub for years now. And so going and finding where all of this is, moving all of this to something else, it became a pretty big deal within the open source community. And again, it's one of those things. Docker has at best an up and down reputation within the open source community over the years. And this one is another black eye for them, unfortunately. But we will see if this continues or if this policy stands over time and if this is something that will resolve itself. And so with that, I'm going to move on to our second article. Our second article is maybe a little bit better news, and this is actually about GitHub. GitHub released a bunch of documents around their internal guides that they had for establishing an open source project office. Many big companies like Microsoft, of course, have open source project office. And take, for instance, Spotify. Spotify, we did a podcast recently with Backstage. Backstage came out of a Spotify. Well, Spotify has a dedicated OSPO is the short-term lingo for it. And you're seeing this more and more. And so GitHub has decided to take all of their internal guides and publish them. So I thought that was a really great step forward. And then our final bit of news, Grafana acquires Pyroscope. And Pyroscope was a continuous profiling platform, and they actually purchased this because Grafana plans to integrate Pyroscope with its Flare continuous observability database to launch a new platform that they're now going to call Grafana Pyroscope. And details of it were in this article. This is a TechCrunch article, really good information about it, how they came to be, but hopefully this is a good exit for them. I didn't see the details of it published in the post, but certainly wish everyone the best over there. So with that, I'm going to close out cloud news for this week. And coming up after the break, we have Gleb Budman, CEO and actually founder of Backblaze, to talk about scale-out storage.
Are you struggling to keep up with the demands of managing and securing identity in your distributed enterprise IT environment? You're not alone, but don't let it hold you back. With Strata's Identity Orchestration Platform, you can secure all your apps on any cloud with any IDP, so your IT teams will never have to refactor for identity again. Imagine modernizing app identity in minutes instead of months, deploying passwordless on any tricky old app, and achieving business resilience with always-on identity, all from one lightweight and flexible platform. Want to see it in action? Share your identity challenge with us on a discovery call, and we'll hook you up with a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Don't miss out. Visit strata.io/cloudcast. That's strata.io/cloudcast.
KubeCon and CloudNativeCon Europe 2023 is coming to Amsterdam on April 18th to 21st. The Cloud Native Computing Foundation's flagship conference gathers adopters and technologists from leading open source and cloud native communities to knowledge share as well as further the cloud native ecosystem. The conference offers in-person as well as virtual registration options. As a special offer for listeners, we're offering complimentary virtual registration. Please use the code KCEUVCCP while supplies last. We'll put that in the show notes. You don't have to remember it. That's KCEUVCCP. And we're back. And folks, you know, one of the things that we have been getting a lot of feedback from a number of you is, obviously, we've been talking about what's going on with the industry, with the economy. You know, a lot of companies are trying to figure out how to be more efficient with their spend, but at the same time, they're also trying to manage the fact that they're trying not to, slow down how much they're engaging with their customers. They're trying to still give rich experiences. And so they're trying to find these right balances between, maybe I have to get costs a little bit under control, but at the same time, you know, we're still generating tons of data. Where should we put that? How do we manage it? How do we protect it so that, you know, we don't have issues with compliance or ransomware or all those sort of things. So a lot of people have been, you know, asking us like, hey, can you guys, you know, dig into a little bit of this kind of conundrum we have between, you know, some things are growing a lot and other things we don't want to grow so much. And so today we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to dig into that topic a little bit. Really excited to have Gleb Budman, who is CEO and co-founder of Backblaze. Gleb, welcome to the show. We've been following Backblaze for a long time. It's been fun to watch you guys grow.
Thanks. Good to be on here, and I appreciate you following us.
Yeah. So you started Backblaze in 2007, sort of an interesting time. AWS was just barely launched S3. It was still, you know, the height of big enterprise storage companies, EMC and NetApp and HP. What was your motivation at the time to start a, you know, storage and backup company?
It's funny. We didn't intend to start a storage company. In 2007, my co-founders and I, we had actually done two tech companies before this. Both of those were venture funded. Both of those were acquired. Neither of them were in storage. Neither of them were in backup. One was in search. One was in email security. And after that second company got acquired, one of my co-founders, my CTO at the time, he did IT for friends and family, the way that you and I and probably most other techies.
Sure, absolutely.
And one of his friends called him up in a panic and said, you got to help me. My laptop crashed and I need you to help me. And he said, no problem. I'll get you a new laptop. We'll get you set up. Where is your backup? And she starts pounding the table and saying, look, what I don't need now is a lecture. What I need is for you to get my stuff back.
Right, right.
And, you know, he had always been just religious about doing backups. He had burned backups onto a CD and a DVD, mailed the set to his brother, kept the set in his closet, did that every week. I mean, he was religious about backups. And so the idea that someone isn't doing backups just never even crossed his mind. And we started talking about it and saying, like, who doesn't do backups? And we started talking to friends and family and coworkers and realizing that very few people actually were doing backups of their data. And we realized that with everything going digital and with everybody getting laptops. And, you know, today it's, you know, in 2023, it's hard to even think about like what existed before digital, what existed before laptops. But, you know, this was 2007. And so we just said, you know, this is going to be an increasingly big problem. And so what we actually set off to do was to try to figure out how to solve that problem, the problem of everything going digital, everything going on laptops, and no one backing those things up, and figuring we were going to have just a complete, you know, global catastrophe where everyone loses data at some point. And so that's what we quit our jobs and decided to start Backblaze to focus on, was that problem. And what happened was we had come up with this insight that, and that part of the reason that people weren't doing backups was that it was too hard and it was too expensive. And we came up with this idea that if you don't have to answer any questions as a customer and things just backed up all of your data, you would use it. It would be more likely you'd get backed up. And so we came up with this idea where we were going to back up every single thing on your computer, everything on your external hard drives. And at a fixed price point, you just didn't have to worry about it. It would be very simple. And we really liked that as the offering for customers. And what we needed to do was figure out where do we put the data for that. And our original plan, and like you said, Amazon S3 had just recently launched, and we were looking at it and saying, hey, you know, they'll take care of the storage for us, so we don't have to build the underlying storage. We'll just put everything on S3. And we started doing some back of the envelope math and realized we were going to lose money on every single customer.
Right, right.
And that's not a great business model.
No.
And since we had decided we were going to start by bootstrapping Backblaze, we didn't have deep pockets to just burn through lots and lots of cash. And so we said, well, we can't use Amazon S3. It's too expensive. And so we started looking around and saying, well, we will buy equipment from EMC and Dell and NetApp and others. And we just looked at those systems and they were all about $1,000 per terabyte. And a hard drive at the time cost about $100 per terabyte. And we said, you know, I don't know why these systems are so expensive, but we will lose money if we use them. So what we said was, all we want to do is take a hard drive, plug it into the internet somehow, and write software to handle everything else. And if we can figure out how to do that, the math should work. And so that's how we started. And we ended up building this global scale storage platform with only one customer, and that was our computer backup service. And then over time, customers wanted to use that for all of their storage needs. And so we opened up the platform for everybody. But we kind of, like I said, we didn't intend to start that way. We kind of fell into it as a customer first, and we would have used S3 if it were affordable, but it just wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was interesting. I mean, I recall when you guys first came out and there was just sort of, you know, I remember it always being, there was sort of two pieces. One of was, you know, here's these guys who are, you know, trying to, you know, completely redefine kind of the economics of storage. And then at the same time, like you were building your own systems from scratch. It was like kind of even before people were doing this concept of open hardware. And, you know, it was like, it was really bold. It was very, it was very compelling. And at the same time, like, people still hadn't really wrapped their head around like even what like an S3 was, like this idea of sort of like infinite amounts of storage. So yeah, I, a lot of kudos for you guys for being bold enough to sort of, you know, take on that kind of stuff way back when it was really kind of the, you know, wild, wild west, if you will.
Yeah, it was a very, like you said, it was a wild time to do it. We actually, one of our first server designs was actually a plywood server that we built to test one of our designs in, and we racked that in a data center in San Francisco, and it worked. And so we ended up designing the a steel version of that, and had, you know, whole iterations of that. But our whole idea with the hardware was expect as little as possible from the hardware. Don't right. Try to get high performance or durability or perform or availability or anything outside of the hardware. Just do all of that in software. And that was kind of the key focus for us as a team.
Yeah. Yeah. Very much the kind of the original model that Larry and Sergey had at Google. Just don't ever, just expect you'll throw away all the hardware. And interesting. So I want to fast forward a little bit because folks at this point don't care about 2007 anymore. Last couple of years, it feels like there's been a big shift in, you know, we went through what feels like a decade of, hey, the cloud is these big three companies. And it feels like the last couple of years, there's been a number of companies, you guys included, who are really kind of redefining, not necessarily like what a hyperscale cloud is, but more of a, you know, cloud for purpose, if you will, or, you know, kind of a specific kind of cloud for specific kind of needs. What are you seeing in, you know, because you guys, you've moved on from that original backup service, you've got, you know, scale out types of services available, you know, cloud offerings. What are you hearing from companies in terms of, you know, maybe either a dissatisfaction with, you know, the big three companies, or, you know, the economics of today, you know, changing what they have to look at and what they're expecting from data storage and data usage and so forth?
Yeah. And I, you know, I kind of briefly mentioned that how we ended up opening up the platform. And that was really driven by what you're saying, which is we had customers that came to us and say, I use your computer backup product. I love it. But I have all these other storage needs. I need to archive the data in my systems. I need to back up information. I'm building this application and it needs all this storage. And I need to figure out where to keep all of that. And I trust you guys and you make it easy and you clearly know how to make it inexpensive. Give me access to it. And so that was what drove us to do it. What we've seen with and that was kind of an outcropping of, I think, what companies experienced over the years, which is a lot of companies had originally built all of their systems on premise. They ran their own servers. They had to do it. They had to buy their hard drives. They had to deploy the equipment. They had to fix it. They had to figure out the software for it. And when the cloud appeared, it was definitely early days and people were kind of poking at it and seeing whether it's possible. Over time, people started using the cloud more and relying on it. But then with the traditional hyperscalers, for a while, people loved that. And then what started happening was the cloud got big enough where companies started saying, I want something special for me. I wanted either lower cost, or I wanted more fully featured, or I want this particular functionality. And I've talked a little bit about the three phases of the cloud, where phase one was from around 2007, where companies just poked at it. They said, is cloud a thing? Do I need to pay attention to it? Should I care about it? You know, can I use it for anything? And that lasted like half a decade, where companies really just poked at it and maybe experimented with it. And then, by 2016, it was phase two, and, you know, clearly cloud was a thing. You know, Amazon was making billions in revenue off of cloud, and customers had clearly decided, yes, cloud makes sense for all of these various reasons. I don't have to deal with the equipment. It scales up and scales down. There's cost efficiencies. It's all kinds of things that are great about the cloud. And phase two was this mass adoption of the cloud. But the cloud, most companies, when they said the cloud, they equated it with Amazon. It was one and the same. And I think what we're seeing is phase three of the cloud, where everybody has acknowledged cloud is a thing, it's important, it's valuable, we should use it. But by cloud, they don't necessarily mean Amazon. Sometimes they mean other hyperscalers, Azure and Google and others. But a lot of it now is also about saying, I want something that those vendors are not providing me. So, and we've seen the rise of Cloudflare and Fastly and Twilio and Backblaze and lots of other companies that are focusing on typically some vertical part of the tech stack. I think about Twilio when they got started, and they started off with, well, we're just going to send, you know, text messages. And that was a very narrow piece, but over time they've evolved into, we're going to help application developers and IT companies with communications. And that alone, it's a one single part of the tech stack, but it's a very large business. And same with Stripe for billing and Cloudflare and Fastly for networking. And these parts of the tech stack have now grown big enough where there's a tremendous amount of opportunity. And the hyperscalers are trying to do everything. And so they're not necessarily focusing on being the best at any one of these things. And so we're seeing companies go to these specialty cloud providers for various things, for better cost dynamics, for better ease of use, for different functionality that they're not getting. You know, in our case, you know, we're 1/5 the price point for storage of S3. We're dramatically easier to use than S3. And so, you know, S3 is just one of 200 services that Amazon offers, but it's a multi-billion dollar business. It's a, you know, IDC has said that storage alone, infrastructure as a service storage alone in 2025 is $100 billion market. There are a lot of companies needing to use storage. And so, you know, a lot of companies still use Amazon for storage. A lot of companies still use Google for storage. But one of the things that, you know, we're seeing increasingly is companies saying, you know, I could use them, but I can also save 80% off of my bill by going to Backblaze. That seems like a reason to consider. And, you know, and we also believe in an open ecosystem. And so a lot of these specialty clouds, you know, Cloudflare and Fastly and Backblaze and others, it's part of this open internet where you can go and use the services that you want. The traditional hyperscalers, because they're trying to offer everything, want to lock you into only using their services. And so I think a lot of companies are also looking to get the benefit of that open internet.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, you know, both the pandemic, you know, spending and now some of the pullback on spending has gotten a lot of folks to really kind of rethink, you know, some of the things that they had been doing, you know, kind of on, you know, automatically. They were just, you know, doing it out of habit, out of, you know, everybody else was doing it. And I think, yeah, I think we're going to see quite a bit of people at least reevaluating some stuff. And, you know, like you said, I tell people all the time, like if I get a coupon in the mail for 20% off or 25% off or an ad on Instagram, like, yeah, you flip through those. But, you know, if you guys are doing 80% different, you know, 80% off essentially pricing, that's always going to be one of those things that's like very much worth a look in terms of, you know, in terms of at least doing an evaluation on it, figuring out, you know, what part of what you do could benefit from that. You guys obviously have been really kind of at the forefront of you know, not only disrupting innovation, disrupting costs. What are some of the things that are, you know, you guys see coming on the horizon? What are you know, what's sort of next on your list of things that you're trying to tackle or problems that you're like, okay, we've knocked those down. You know, what's next on your list?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a little bit of the, you know, what's next on our list and what's happening in the industry as a whole. And I think, you know, if you look at what's happening, I think for the industry as a whole, a lot of organizations right now are trying to figure out how to optimize their infrastructure. You know, you heard, you know, Zuckerberg say that Facebook was had to dramatically reduce the spend on its infrastructure. You know, Elon Musk said that Twitter had to cut $1 billion out of their infrastructure. So I think with the economic environment that we're all in, companies are trying to figure out how do you continue to provide quality of service and optimize cost at the same time. And so there's a big focus on that. And that's something that, you know, for us, we're spending a lot of time with our customers, you know, helping them figure out, you know, if they've been on AWS and they've been paying those large fees. And a lot of times it's also the fees for getting the data out of Amazon over to their, you know, to wherever they want it to be. So that's what we're spending a lot of time on and helping customers with. I think one of the things that we're seeing is, you know, ransomware is certainly a hot topic for companies. It's been an issue for a while, but it continues to be an issue for companies. And so we have been helping companies with how do you protect all of your data from ransomware. You know, we launched functionality called Object Lock to help companies protect their data from ransomware. That's been very popular. You know, we certainly pay attention to some of the AI innovations that have been happening. That's been exciting. You know, AI is exciting in general for the landscape. It's also interesting from a storage perspective because AI generates a lot of new data, and it also requires data as a for training algorithms and the like. You know, I was talking, we had, you know, a customer recently that they built a model on AWS for their data set, but in terms of the actual running of their infrastructure, they decided they couldn't afford to do that on AWS, and they built their infrastructure on Backblaze. And so this kind of using multiple clouds for whichever purposes they're best suited for. It was an interesting example of that. That's a company called Monument AI. They're building kind of a privacy focused Google Photos. So that's, you know, that's something that we're kind of keeping an eye on and looking at as a trend as well.
Yeah. I'm curious, you commented about something just earlier about, people trying to figure out like ingress and egress costs. I know that's something that has been, a complaint to a certain extent about some of the bigger three clouds. Some of the edge providers are trying to do some things. What do you guys see, or what are some of the things that you're trying to do to help companies that, you know, have large amounts of data? You guys obviously are very good at storing it at a very efficient price, but are there things that you're working on or that you can do to help people from the bandwidth perspective as well, or, you know, sort of network ingress and egress cost perspective?
We absolutely do. I think that egress is one of those areas where people are now waking up to how big of an issue it is. For a long time, especially in phase two of the cloud, where people looked at AWS as the cloud and they kept all of their systems inside of AWS, it was less of an issue because the data didn't leave AWS. Now, as companies are saying, you know, I want to use AWS for something, I want to use Azure for something, I want to use Google for something, I might want to use Backblaze and Cloudflare and Fastly and others, they're moving the data out of some of these traditional hyperscalers, and the cost that those companies charge to get your data out is crazy. We looked at it, and getting your data out of Amazon one single time costs as much as storing it inside of Backblaze for an entire year and a half.
Wow.
It's crazy. And in terms of what are we doing to help, we make it nearly or completely free for you to get your data out and move it around. So whereas they charge around 9 cents per gigabyte, we charge a penny. So about 1/10 what they cost to get your data out. And then we also cross connect with a variety of partners, including Cloudflare and Fastly and DigitalOcean and Vulture and a variety of others to get make the data completely free to get your data out. So we have a service called Universal Data Migration that helps make it free to get your data from those companies. So if you want to get your data out of AWS, we will actually get it out of there for free using our Universal Data Migration service. Some of that is us lowering the cost of getting it out using some interesting approaches and technology, and some of that is us subsidizing it. And then for you to get it from us to Cloudflare, Fastly, Vulture, DigitalOcean, and anybody else, we will actually make it free to get your data to them as well. So we fundamentally believe in the open internet, and we believe that companies want to build that way. And so we make it easy and inexpensive for them to do that.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. Yeah. We're always fascinated by folks who, you know, the technology is always really compelling, but anybody who can figure out a way to sort of bend economic curves is almost more compelling these days. So very, very cool that you guys are doing that stuff. I want to hit on one more thing. Ransomware and ransomware attacks are always, you know, they pop up in the news in sometimes the worst ways. You know, we had one, I don't know, a year or so ago that shut down oil pipelines all along the East Coast. None of us could get gas. Are you seeing the frequency of these make people kind of rethink their backup strategies, their DR strategies? Are you seeing any different trends because of stuff like ransomware that's becoming so much more prevalent than, you know, a backhoe cut or something like that?
Yeah, we're seeing people think about what the different layers are. So a long time ago, people used to think, oh, as long as I've got my data RAID, then it's backed up. And that was never a good backup because RAID's not a backup, but it was better than having it, your data on a single hard drive. Then at some point it became, well, as long as I have a copy of my data somewhere. And now what we're seeing is, this functionality I mentioned that we've launched called Object Lock, where companies want to actually lock their data. So not only do they have a copy of it wherever they have it as primary, not only do they then add a cloud copy with us, but they actually want to lock that cloud copy so that it cannot be changed or deleted for some period of time. And so we're seeing that becoming an increasing need and desire for companies. And we have partners like Veeam and others that build that support for that functionality into their products. So companies that use Veeam can say, please lock this data. Not only do you want it backed up in Backblaze, but you want to make sure that it's also locked and not being changed.
Interesting. Very, very cool. No, this has been fascinating because I feel like it's you guys have a really clear vision on distinct customer problems, how to solve those problems, and how to do it in a way that's both sort of technically compelling, but really economically compelling. So this has been fascinating to dig in with you guys. I really, really appreciate it. If folks want to get in touch with your team, want to engage with the service, what are the best ways to do that? Or maybe what are some of the events where you guys might be out at, anytime soon where they can engage with the team?
Yeah. So, backblaze.com, blaze.com, is obviously a great way to go. They can get started with a free service. We provide 10 gigabytes free of Backblaze B2. We provide a free trial of the computer backup service. So those are great ways to get started. They can also contact the team directly through there. We will be at NAB in a couple months. That's a fairly significant media show that a lot of our customers like to attend. We were just at Developer Week this past week, but we'll be at various different shows and trends. But feel free to reach out to us through the website, through Twitter, etc.
Good stuff. Gleb, thank you so much for the time today. This has been really, really interesting. Folks, hope you enjoyed it. Like we said, we're always looking for not only ways to educate you on technology trends and stuff, but also, hopefully, address some of your issues that you're dealing with from an economic perspective and an efficiency perspective. And even most importantly, keeping those open options available to you. Very, very exciting stuff. So with that, I want to wrap it up. We want to thank Gleb for his time today for educating us. Thank you all for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for helping us grow the show and grow the community. And with that, I'll wrap it up. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.